So when I first met you, you were an improvisational comedian in Chicago in the 90s. Now you are the COO of Twitter, the international social media thing. And so what I want to know, is this your biggest and best improvisational joke ever?
See, that's a nice angle.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player, or your iPad, Mom. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast to number 181, Twitter's New Coup. The RSC has been goofing around on Twitter, the online social media mini-blogging service, since November 2008. But in November 2009, Dick Costolo became the chief operating officer of Twitter, the COO, the coup, if you will. Dick's an old comedy friend of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, a Second City alum and veteran of the Annoyance Theater in Chicago, and he also co-created and performed in the stage show Modern Problems in Science, which also became a TV show on Paramount UK. Dick's new duties include submitting to ridiculous interviews like this one and seriously questioning when he'll be found out.
It is the case that you find yourself saying, they know that's just me, Dick Costolo, right? Like, I just got this card. So, like, when once you go on CNBC and talk to, Julia Borstein about blah, right. You think, what do you want me to go on there for? I don't know anything.
but you're the guy with the business card and the office and the title.
Yeah, with the coup.
You're the coup. But when you were doing improv in Chicago, doing, among other things, Modern Problems in Science with Rich Fulcher, were you also becoming a titan of industry behind the scenes and none of us knew it? You were.
I would say that the interesting intersection of the two is that having the improvisation background helps you every day in business. You know, you're on the phone with somebody and you're negotiating something and they throw a curveball at you, or you're on stage presenting and your slides don't work or whatever. It's much easier to just be able to roll with the punches having the background of improvisation. And just not worrying about it. You just think more about, well, let's just have fun with this and let's do this thing and see what happens, instead of, well, what will I say? You know, instead of having to worry about, well, what am I going to say if, you know, that guy says this? I don't know what I'll say. You know, you just never think about those things, which is a nice way to go through life.
It certainly makes you a better guest on CNBC. You know, it certainly makes you a more lively, unpredictable guest when they ask you a silly question about what your plans are and you give them a sarcastic answer. They don't know what to do.
Yeah, those business interviews are funny, you know, like, when is phase three? I don't know when phase three is going to be. That's why we're having
Friday.
That's why we have phases. Phase one is now. And if I knew when phase two and phase three were, you know, we wouldn't call them phase two and phase three. We'd say it's all here. It all is. So.
Well, let's get back to Twitter's many phases in a bit. But were you doing this? Were you?
Well, that was a nice transition. That was a nice segue.
Thank you.
The way you incorporated phases into, you've gone on, rambled along enough about that.
And you, yeah.
Whose podcast is this anyway?
No, it's, listen. If I'll happily go take a small office on a lower level of Twitter if they want to have me be the official Twitter of podcast.
There's only one floor though, so there's no.
Really?
There's only one floor at Twitter. Yeah,
that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
It seems like there should be better than that.
Does that ruin everything? You want to turn it off now?
Yeah, we're done. We're done. Thank you. Yeah. Call it off. But back in Chicago, were you doing internet startup companies when back then? Because you were part of. You're the guy, and I've said this before on the podcast, you were one of the developers, founders, owners of FeedBurner, which makes podcasts possible, right?
That's right. I was one of the four founders of that company. We sold it to Google in 2007, mm-hmm. Worked at Google for a couple of years from Chicago, and then moved out west.
How long have you been doing internet startups or working in this business?
95.
Okay.
95-ish.
Yeah,
pretty maybe even 94, early days, like when the Netscape browser first kind of came out. I remember seeing that for the first time. Gosh, I'm guessing it was 93 or 94 now, but that might be wrong. And I remember thinking, this seems important and should pay attention to this. And it was.
And was that your focus in college? I mean, were you always torn between performing and this, or was always performing was a hobby and this was what you were doing?
No, I was always I was doing stand-up at University of Michigan. I was studying computer science. Not a lot of crossover, by the way. Mm. Not a lot of people in the computer science department.
Who got more women, the people in the theater department or the...
The dirty little secret is neither was the answer. None of the above.
and so was FeedBurner the first company that you founded that sort of made a splash?
No, it was the third. We started one called Burning Door Network Media and sold that. And we started a second one called Spy On It.
Yes, I remember Spy On It. Yeah. Is that the forerunner of Google Search?
Let's go with yes.
Sorry, I meant Google Alerts.
It's the forerunner of Google Alerts, certainly.
Yeah.
I wish it had been the forerunner of Google Search.
Yeah, no.
We wouldn't be sitting here talking into a Belkin microphone. We'd be.
You could probably hook a brother up with a better recording situation.
Wouldn't be carrying around your technology in an Altoids tin. It would be a much nicer. We'd have a whole studio and a helicopter somewhere. But yes, it was the forefather of Google Alerts. It was wireless alerts.
And do Google buy that company?
Spy On It?
Spy On It?
No.
Okay.
They bought the other one. They bought FeedBurner.
You
only really buy, you're only going to sell a company to another company once, don't you think? I mean, if the company buys your company and then you go out and start another company, then they're probably going to be like, really? We got to buy that guy again? We had him here. And you left, and now we're going to buy him again? I don't think that happens.
But that's good that you say that, because my impression was you started a company. Every company you started got bought by some big company. But really, it was only FeedBurner that got bought by Google.
No, Spy On It got bought by a company, but not Google.
I see.
The point is, you can't go back and sell the next company to the same guy again.
Well, and I remember you were saying you worked at Google for a while. And what was that like, working for the man?
Working for the man. Working at Google is pleasant. The people are pleasant. They're extraordinarily smart. There's no shortage of giant brains there. I remember one of my favorite experiences at Google was I was in this big meeting early on of like 30 people, and it's go around the room and introduce yourself, and for a little introduction, one of these, introduce yourself and say something that nobody knows about you, and I was like last. And everyone was, and the thing nobody knows about me is, the other people were all, I was the first alternate in the 1998, women's gymnastics team. And the thing nobody knows about me is I once walked across the earth, and then it got to me and it was like, I got like scarlet fever and chicken pox the same year in fourth grade. Nobody knows that about me. So it's all these, incredible overachievers that all went to Harvard and Stanford and I didn't do any of that.
So. But you're a Wolverine. You went to University of Michigan. No flies on that school?
No flies on that school. No, it's good. The founder there, Larry Page, went to Michigan. So I think that's why I slipped in under the...
But computer science, that's what you thought that this looked cool? It was fun to you? It was an opportunity? Or all of the above? I mean, did you do it strictly for the business aspect? Or this is... You really love this stuff.
I did it when I was in school. I did it strictly for the I'm going to have to go work somewhere, and I should like have a degree that I could actually do something with, and I should do. And my dad was doing computer science, so I followed in his footsteps and did computer science. But I was but I turned down all my job offers at the end of my senior year at Michigan, and moved to Chicago to do the Second City stuff, because I just decided, look, I don't want to go do this yet. I'd rather. Right. Not make any money improvising.
Now that you're the coup of Twitter, do you miss those heady days when you were on Paramount UK with your own Modern Problems in Science TV show?
No, I never am one of those people that looks back and says, God, if only it was, 2004 from June, if only it was June 2004 again, that was awesome. I just don't think about stuff that way. It was... talking to somebody else from Michigan where I grew up the other day, and just like I'm always, whatever the next thing is that I'm doing is the thing I'm thinking about, and I just don't look back on those. I wish I was doing XYZ again.
Well, you're always looking forward. That's a good thing.
or at least worrying about what I'm not doing right now.
Right. You have a way to prioritize the things you worry about.
That's precisely.
Yes.
Yeah. My stress is very in the moment.
Hi, this is Simon Helberg, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Or to reduce that, this is Simon, your reduced company.
So how did you get the gig at Twitter?
So I moved out here to the Bay Area at the end of July. We moved out here.
Of 2009?
Yeah. To be perfectly honest, so I was done at Google. I didn't know what I was going to do next, but I was done there. I'd left in early July. We were sick of living in the horribly cold weather in Chicago. We just decided, let's move, let's get out of here and get out of this weather. So we moved out here, and Ev Williams, the CEO of Twitter, after I was out here, sent me a direct message. He was about to go on paternity leave. He was about to have his first baby, and he was going to take a couple weeks off, and he sent me a direct message via Twitter saying, hey, can you come in and kind of like... He was joking. He said, will you come in and be interim CEO while I'm out for a couple weeks? Basically saying, okay, could you come in and kind of take care of some financial stuff and look after some things for a couple weeks while I'm gone? And I said, you know, I sent him a response back and said, are you serious? And he sent me a response back and said, yeah, and actually if you're, you know, and it kind of snowballed from there. And then two of his investors, to make a long story short, are people that I've known from my previous companies, and those guys kind of got involved. And then Lauren, my wife, got wind of the news and, you know, said, what are you, you know, what are you, you got to go do that
right,
or you'd be an idiot. And I already think you're an idiot, so don't be a bigger idiot. So I did it.
You have the same kind of relationship with your wife that I have with mine.
Yeah, it's all about being less of an idiot. That's the goal.
It's that same enormous respect.
That's right.
But your reputation preceded you, and everybody knows you, and you came aboard. I remember you came aboard Twitter back in the fall of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
That was just when I had just sort of barely begun to be involved with Twitter figure it out.
There's a large question around, is the success in the last 7 months due to me or you? There's still unresolved.
Is that unresolved? Because in my head, it's not unresolved.
Yeah, okay, let's go with that. Let's go with that then.
But back in the fall of 2009, they were saying, oh, it's never going to make any money. How can the thing? It's
money.
So popular. There was so much noise about Twitter in the media that, ooh, it's this very popular thing. Nobody really knows what it is, and it's not making any money.
Yeah.
And then you came aboard, and those were all the jokes when you came aboard, was that,
yeah.
Oh, good job. Is there a business model yet?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, now
who's laughing?
Well,
that's
exactly.
What I say.
Now Twitter is
lots of people are.
Well,
still
lots
laughing.
Of people are still laughing, but Twitter is now a thing, and people aren't talking about it that way anymore. It's a thing that's been around forever, and people aren't talking about the business model. And in fact, just a couple of weeks ago, you announced a big business plan. And
that's right. There were always 14 different ways the company could make money. And the people inside the company and near the company always knew, look, we could kind of do any one of these things at any point. And we just wanted to wait until we had figured something out that was, the word I keep using is organic. It's probably maybe not the right word, but we just wanted to figure something out that was natural to the way people already use Twitter. And we found one that we liked with this promoted tweet stuff. So we're doing that, and it's off to a really amazing start. We're super excited about it.
Well, it seems really also really kind of user-friendly, too, because you're taking...
It's not jamming, you know, display ads in front of people, and it's just... taking the way companies already use it and helping them use it like that, but better.
Right.
So it's not hopefully going to be, oh, now it's, you know, now it's Twitter plus all the, you know, 30-second pre-roll ads I have to watch before I can look at a tweet.
That right. Would, exactly.
You know.
And so how much of your day is spent, you know, shining Ashton Kutcher's shoes? I mean, because everybody thinks he's the guy who runs Twitter.
he's got it's kind of a juggernaut on there. Most of my day is spent on really tedious stuff, frankly, that people would be horrified to hear is what you would have to do to have that role.
Right.
It's not anything even remotely glamorous.
It's not the fun stuff.
No, it's, you know, look at this. Why did we sign this contract this way, and why did we do this? And, you know, this guy wants these 14 things from us, and right, we only want to give him these 8. So you got to call him, and it's stuff like that. It's not, you know, go hang out with Ben Stiller at a party.
Right. You know, right. You and Stephen Fry don't take lunch.
No, I don't say, hey, at Stephen at home. Yeah. Let's, you know, there's right, none of that stuff.
Well, I remember when you first started, you said, like, the first things you did as the new COO is that you actually took the one or two things that were making money for Twitter and you pulled the plug on them.
Yeah. That was my first thing I did, was turned off the one or two things that were making money for Twitter.
Well done. That just seems.
Don't you think? Right? Because.
Counterintuitive.
To me, was take it back to zero, yeah, and then everything from there will be all my responsibility.
Right.
Right? So get rid of the existing stuff, and now, then I'll be able to know everything we make from here was me.
Well, and also, I remember you saying you turned down the volume. You turned down a little bit of the noise. You tried to turn down the volume of the noise that people were making about Twitter.
Yeah, I just wanted to, and you know, part of the reason for getting the like most companies don't have to announce their business model. Like, right, they don't have to come out at a conference and go, here's how we're going to make money, and right, everything, and then, you know, much gnashing of teeth. Mm-hmm. But the reason we decided to do it this way was because there was just so much, like, when are you going to make money? You know, so just decided, let's just announce it, and then it'll be done, mm-hmm, and we can go about our business we were going about anyway.
Well, and the other thing you were saying, too, is that even before making money, you just wanted to make sure that the company had enough servers going. I mean, because it is such a global phenomenon. I mean, the whole, you know, the Tehran elections and the world's news cycles are based on the geeks who are keeping the Twitter servers running, because yeah, the Twitterers are the ones that are driving the news cycles.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy the stuff that we have happen internally around giant news stories. You know, Hugo Chavez, who was just a couple months ago, you know, bemoaning Twitter, is now on Twitter. Mm. And he's trying to get Fidel Castro to join Twitter. And, you know, you see these things and you think, really? That's like this thing I'm working on. That's right. Weird, you know.
Now, that's the world's greatest tweet up. Fidel, Hugo,
yes,
and Josh 1426.
The great people's tweet up of 2010. We got to get that. That's going to be in Caracas, I think.
We got to make sure that trends.
We got to make sure that trends. We do.
Why can I not search past my own tweets like past over 12 days?
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing.
It disappears.
It's not good. We know that. We have a lot of work to do on search. The search turns out to be this super hard problem. We have a bunch of engineers working on it. And the answer to your question is I have absolutely no idea.
But dude, you're the coup.
It's a known it's a challenge.
A known challenge. And what about how cool is it that all of our tweets, yours, mine, Josh's, Hugo's, Fidel's, are all going to be collected now in the Library of Congress?
That's pretty cool. People are doing lots of cool things with tweets, like, you know, setting up accounts for their children who have just been born and, like, tweeting through those to the kids and protecting the accounts, and they don't have any other followers. And it's just a bunch of cool stuff that people are doing with it. And given all the news things that break on Twitter and then the kind of the flow of the news story that happens in real time, we just thought it would be a good idea for researchers in the future to be able to go back and say, hey, you know, the popular history of the Iran election is X, but what really happened? And then, you know, be able to play that back just via the tweets.
Well, and it was funny because we were talking earlier that there is a learning curve to Twitter. You kind of join, you figure out how it's useful to you. How do you describe the value of Twitter?
I don't do a good job of it. Oh, yeah. I'm not the guy who I'm the COO. I'm not the describe the value of Twitter guy.
You describe the phases.
Yeah, I'm the guy who describes when the phases will be done.
Right.
But the whole, I mean, it was certainly for me, I had the same experience. I remember when Ev called me and said, hey, you know, in whatever, 2006, hey, we built this thing. It's called Twitter. It was just, it had no vowels at that point. It was twttr.com. And I went and looked at it, and it's, you know, like, well, what is it? And he's like, well, you just type in, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, well, why would I do that? You know, like, well, then people who can see what you're doing, and then, you know, you'd know what they're doing.
Right.
And I just thought, like, this, you know, it's idiotic. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. And then, of course, it's kind of one of those things that people come back to after a couple months, after they find a few people to follow, or they get a way somebody else uses it. And then it starts to, there's like this critical mass of people you're following, and it all starts to come together, and you go, oh, now I get it. But I've never been able to describe it to somebody in a couple sentences to this day, despite being asked constantly, like, why should I use it?
The thing I like about it is it seems like it's like with your Twitter account, can you're your own press agent. You can get your own word out there, and the thing I love about it is that it's a dialogue with, since I tweet as for the Reduced Shakespeare Company, we have Twitter dialogues with our fans and whatever. And
you know, the fascinating thing about it is just that individually it's pretty much useless when you look at just yours. If you just go look at your profile, you know, mm-hmm. twitter.com/Dixie, mm-hmm. And you look at them all, it's just stupid.
Right.
It's just this collection of stupid stuff. But when you look at your timeline of the 40 or 200 or 400 people you follow and you see it all there together as it's happening, it works. And then it's almost impossible to describe why that is, but it is.
Right.
I think you're right, and I think there's something valuable in the stupidity, because I think the stupidity is sort of humanizing a little bit. You know, it's kind of a great equalizer, a little bit. Sometimes you get a Kirstie Alley, and you go, "Whoa, that's way more information than I needed to know from Kirstie Alley." But sometimes you get somebody. He's a really important dude, but he's kind of interesting and kind of neat.
It's a leveling of the playing field.
Yeah.
And given that it's only 140, the limitation of it being only 140 characters is the genius of the platform, because it's this great leveling and everyone has time for that much information. And so there's no like, oh my God, this windbag who's written this other, you know,
right.
And once again, like
right.
This podcast, which has now been an hour and 45 minutes long, for example. And so it's this great just leveling out of being able to consume little chunks from all over the world, and Conan O'Brien's 140 characters are he gets no more or no less than, for example, someone like yourself.
Exactly.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your internet startup via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel, or better yet, best of all, you can become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Titan of Industry Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Jeremy Bennington. No reason, it is just random. Special thanks to Simon Helberg from Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog and The Big Bang Theory. Thanks also to RSE actor Jeff Marlowe. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 181/543 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And I don't tweet what I had for breakfast, and I hardly ever tweet on the toilet. I think that's called twooping.
I didn't even know that was a thing, and now I'm sad that I have discovered that. So let's pretend that you didn't say that.
It could be called twitting, but that's different.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.